The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And you're welcome back. We're into the second hour of Thursday's 9 till noon show. How you're keeping? Let us know. 086 60 25,000. Why did none of the councillors come around the Burnfoot area to canvass for votes? None of them mentioned special needs and what they can do to help the families. Not going to vote tomorrow, says the listener. Hi, Greg. Do you need a voting card to vote? I lost mine. Will my ID work? Yes, it will. So you're on the register. You know where you are due to vote. You do not need your voting card. You will turn up at the polling station and you'll identify yourself. They'll probably look for your ID and they will hand you two sheets. One is the EU election, one the local election, and batter away. You do not need your voting card. And to be honest with you, it's a good job that you don't. Hi, do our number 2 and 3 votes affect the election? Yes, indeed, they do. So if you were to, if your number one vote, oh, I'm going to make a mess of this, but anyway, so say you vote number one, so maybe you might want to give someone a chance or go with your regular person, and maybe your number two, you want to give someone a chance to go with your regular person. The number one votes are counted, obviously, towards the first preference votes. And then people are eliminated, and then your second vote at that, your second preference at that stage comes into play, I believe. Or if someone exceeds the quota, then they might have a surplus and so on and so forth. Do I have to vote for the same party in the European and local elections? No, not at all. You might say, that you want to vote for your local Green representative or Labour representative. I want to mention all parties, by the way, in the locals, because you think they're a good person, they'll work for your area. And you're not really even endorsing the party as such. Local elections are not the general election, so you can vote for your person if you wish. And then you can go, right, well, I'd like an independent in Europe because I think the EU has too much power over us, or whatever it might be, right? That's just another random example. So you can vote whichever way you like in the local elections and vote completely different in the European elections. So we'll see what someone's saying there. They might say, right, if I vote Fianna Fáil in the locals, do I have to vote Fianna Fáil in Europe as an example again? I'm trying to include all the parties, so it seems fair. No, not at all. You go in and do what you want. Right, okay. And you also don't have to go down the list either, by the way. It's completely up to you. But you don't have to go to 1 to 7 on the EU ballot, or you don't have to go down you don't have to go down to 1 to 5 or 6 or 10 or whatever it is on your local. If you just want to give someone your number one, that's completely up to you. This is your chance, and you have the right to vote whichever way you wish. What ID do you need to vote? I'll get a proper list of that, but I presume it's all the usuals, all the usual forms of ID that would be accepted. But if you've got a particular one, that you wonder, would it be connected like a student card? I can check that. Regarding the voting, do you put in your 1, 2, 3 for local election candidates if you want? Yes, you can. You can go right down the list, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. That's completely up to you. For your MEP candidates, is it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in order of preference? Yes, you could say that. You can try and get strategic on it as well, who you might think might get over the line or be eliminated and where that vote might go. You can go just one on each, or you can go all the way down. It's whichever. A lot of the votes eventually do come into play. Just back to what ID you need tomorrow. If you don't have your polling card, you best bring ID with you anyway. A passport will do, a driving license, an employee identity card containing a photograph, a student identity card issued by an educational institution containing a photograph, a travel document containing name and photograph, a bank or savings or credit union book containing address and constituency. So that covers you if you don't have picture ID. Your public services card also good as well. Over the past few years, government has proven new people are needed in politics, including the opposition. There's not a bright future for our children or grandchildren as it stands. I think, you know, if we get it right, this country could be a real model for every other country to look on. We're small, do you know what I mean? We're the size of Manchester. We're well-resourced. You know, if there's wills, there's ways. We should be fit to do it, you know. We're not talking about a population of 128 million here. You know, as I say, we're the size of a big UK city, big British city, and we have big money. And it should be able to be divvied out in such a way that's fair. The people who work hard can earn money, right, and not feel guilty for it. But those that are less well off can also be helped. It shouldn't be beyond us, should it? A caller says it's easier and quicker for a poll clerk to tick a name off the register when a voter has their polling card with them. So that guy shouldn't be advising otherwise, especially if there's a long queue of voters. If that guy is me, we're talking here about people who've lost their polling card or don't have them. I'm not saying don't bother bringing your polling card, bring your driving licence. There are people, and we'll try and answer those queries, who either didn't get a polling card or have lost it, and we're offering them advice. Okay, I have a daughter living in Dublin for 10 years. Her polling card comes to Inishowen. Can she vote in Dublin with her Inishowen polling card? No, she can't do that, I'm afraid. In the referendum, me and my fiancé voted in a different place to another member of the family living with us now. This time it's the same. Their voting card for the other person went to the old address. Can they vote where they voted before, even though voting card, old address? You can really only vote where you are registered to vote. You'll be on a list at your local polling station, or what's deemed to be your local polling station. Read the Four Lanes Road. Correctly said, Greg, that Four Lanes Road upgrade is an unmitigated disaster. What a waste of time, inconvenience and thousands. And exactly like you said, no lane for emergency services, especially an ambulance. But even so, sometimes, you know, your fire service is even equally more time sensitive. And these people, for the fire service, for an example, like, they work within a certain distance of, and I think they do amazing work, and you know, I'm delighted that their conditions were improved, rightly so. They work very close to where the fire service is because it's about time. And as soon as that pager goes off, they race down there, obviously responsibly and safely. They're trained to get into the gear and onto that fire unit just as quickly as possible. All of these reasons, because every second counts. And then they've got flashing blue lights because it's so important that they get to where they need to be at a certain time. And then they have to get to where they're going. One thing in all of their training and all of the speed that's not accounted for is a road design that stops them going where they're going. Now, the one thing I'll say about the fire service, and correct me if I'm wrong, is it not more likely that the fire service is going to be outbound from Letterkenny, perhaps, than inbound? I think ambulances invariably, I mean, obviously they're going to be outbound, not too big an issue. I think they're going to come inbound on blue lights perhaps more often than the fire service. Am I right or wrong in that? I'm not sure. But either way, everything, these guys are timed to do things as quickly as possible. The last thing they need is to be sat on a brand new road with enough space on one side for four or five cyclists and pedestrians, which is blocked off for access to vehicles. An emergency vehicle, and plus the stress of sitting. Have you been in that situation where you know there's someone in dire straits in the back of an ambulance and you can't get out of the way? You'd want to, you know what they're going through, and you can't. It's a terrible situation. Enjoyed recent interview with Minister Anne Rabbit. She seems to get it and has a good grasp of her brief, Greg. Good rapport with us, which brings out the best in her. Look, I've spoken to Minister Anne Rabbit in the past, and in fairness, you know, I hope that our interviews and conversations have assisted in her form and opinions. And I have no problem working with someone like Minister Anne Rabbit, not working with them, if you know what I mean, but, you know, informing them, having good interviews, and then sort of bringing them on when the campaigns locally and maybe the interviews have helped in bringing money into our county. That's what our role is here. It's to try and get more for us and then also to welcome it when it happens, to give people the credit they deserve. A caller says, if the government is so determined to stop diesel cars, why is diesel 10 cent a litre cheaper than petrol? Would you have wished? It's expensive enough. Right, back with more after the bingo. Now, do you mind, remember, if you were listening yesterday? Actually, you don't need to have listened yesterday, because it's your—it's the reality that, dependent on where you live, your car insurance can be very expensive. It's a key factor in calculating the cost of car insurance. Living in a more deprived, more ethnically diverse location increases your chances of receiving a higher quote, a new survey on the Irish insurance industry has found. This can lead to an extreme situation, for an example, where a 25-year-old in South Dublin gets cheaper cover than a 60-year-old living in what the researchers describe as a poorer location. Now, as I said on the programme yesterday, I did a little, I wouldn't call it research, I checked on this myself, and I checked three areas. I think it was Bundoran, Lahey, and the Fannad area. and the exact same criteria except the location, and there was an €800 difference between the Fannad area and the Donegal town area. And it was cheaper, by the way. Sorry, that was cheaper. Right, OK. Dr. Adrian Byrne of Cedar and Idero Analytics joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you, Adrian. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Pleasure to be with you.
Right, OK. So talk us through this survey, sort of how it was conducted, what it looked at.
So this survey was done over a year ago, and it took about a year to complete. It was motivated by two studies that had done this similarly in Italy and in the UK. So there was inspiration from drawing from there. And with our technical capabilities, we were able to derive more quotes than both of those studies combined. And also another motivation for us is the EU AI Act, which is coming in. That's AI for artificial intelligence. And this is playing upon the fact that more and more businesses are bringing AI operations into their systems, into their businesses. And in the case of insurance, insurance is going to be classified as high risk in the AI Act because it's under the category of access to essential services for citizens in the EU. So we did this study to see if there was any harmful or unwanted bias in the system. And we were basically doing it from the outside looking in.
And you talked about the extent of this study, 40,000 quotes from 10 car insurance companies. I mean, that is pretty comprehensive, pardon the pun.
Yeah, it's a good pun. And by the way, well done on your own research. I was listening to that. Very good. Yeah, so even though it's 40,000, I must stress that, and by the way, for anybody that's interested, please go along to the AI Ethics Center website in Idero Analytics. You can get access to the report and the data set behind this. We're making it available to anybody that's interested so they can verify our findings. But yes, the way we had to do this is when you want to do it in a kind of controlled way, you have to change one thing and keep everything else the same. So, and the more data you can bring in, the more robust the findings. So even though it's 40,000 quotes, there's many things we couldn't look at. So, for example, in our study, everybody is an Irish citizen and everybody has a full Irish driver's license. We did not change that at all. So that's just an example of how we had to control and then change one thing, say, for example, your sex or your name. And then we looked at the differences, and we did stuff along for claims and no claims bonuses as well. But as soon as you start to try and look at different changes, Greg, those numbers balloon. So even though it's 40,000, there's many things we weren't able to do with that
Adrian,
amount of data.
Obviously, listen, the journalists have looked at this and they've picked out, I would imagine they've picked out some of their key findings. You know, what else? You mentioned different, if you put in a different sex or a different name, for an example. Anything popping up there that's worth mentioning?
No, just to say that it was kind of like a very quick check to say if we change the name from like an Irish or English sounding name to a non-Irish, non-English sounding name, keeping the same criteria in terms of like this is an Irish citizen with a full Irish driver's license, we didn't find any difference.
Right.
And that was kind of like a sense check, because if that had been different in our study, that would have been very, very controversial and sensational.
Yes.
So that was one thing that was reassuring to find. And the other thing was that according to gender discrimination law now in the EU, we did not find a difference between men and women. But that's bearing in mind that this is for people that were like with like. So the only thing that was different was their gender. Mm-hmm. But for example, they had zero penalty points. They were the same age and they lived in the same area.
I spoke to a member of the travelling community off air who was of the view that they would be being discriminated because of their name. Now, it was one person, right? I don't suppose that was run through the system, was it?
Yes, it was. We did look at some names in that regard, and you can check the report for more details, but we did not find, as we say in the business, a statistically significant finding in that regard.
Okay, so where did you find the biggest difference? And I think we've touched on them, but just I want to hear it from you, Adrian.
Yeah, so just in relation to that last point, Greg, if you're talking to the travelling community, they should bear in mind where they are resident.
Yeah,
because it's where you are resident, which is the big deal here. So, so the thing is here, Greg, is that we found, and this is reassuring for the car insurance industry, that all of the key drivers of what determine your quote are valid. So that's your age, your driving experience, policy in your own name, no claims bonus, and whether you've made a claim or not, penalty points. They all still matter. What we found that was very interesting was that if you add to that where you live, and then you start to interact where you live with like variations of, say, you have like 6 penalty points instead of 0 penalty points, or you've made a claim in the last 5 years versus not making a claim. We found that those outcomes were not uniformly distributed across the locations, which means that depending on where you live, you were either at an advantage or a disadvantage relative to others.
Yeah. I'm not sure this is within the scope of this survey, but you do wonder what's input to determine the output. Like, for instance, if you're a journalist, your insurance is much more expensive. I don't know why that is. Is it because you travel more? Theoretically, I don't know. But I'd say those other industries are the same too, hairdressers or whatever it might be. You have to declare your correct type of employment. But, you know, I don't think you would have covered that people's type of employment as part of this survey, would you?
Well, actually, Greg, we did because, okay. I mean, in order to inform this study, we had to build a database which was adhering to the questions you're asked online when you go to the websites of these insurers. You have to fill out all the fields, and one of those fields is your occupation. So we did have to put in occupation, and we did find some differences there. And we also tried to do a proxy tactic where we picked gender, kind of like jobs that were you'd associate with one gender over another, like a teacher and a nurse versus a logger, fisher, farmer. If you go to the report again, you'll see the details on this. But what we found that stood out is that people that work in retail were being penalized compared to all these other professions. And again, that wasn't uniformly the case across these different locations, okay? So there was that. But the other thing to mention about occupation is in our study, we decided to make everybody social only. So that means that you're using your car for social only, not business commute. So even with that, occupation mattered because retail was being penalized more than the other professions we looked at.
So how does this work, Adrian? Can you conclude how it works that if you are from, you know, a poorer part or more ethnically diverse, you know, like how would that throw out those variations, do you think? Is it that the AI has been trained by a human to that end?
So here's the thing, and I'm glad you're bringing back the AI because it's a very important part of the study, is that as we automate more and more of the tasks that we do in business, and insurance is just one example, by the way, this can extend to many other industries. As we do that, we have an opportunity here to make things less biased than they were previously when humans were doing everything, okay? Now, bias has always been with us, but it's just making people aware we have an opportunity here when we bring AI into the party, so to speak, that are we factoring in these unconscious biases that we have, and how do they actually permeate through to the output side from the input?
Well, to some extent, I mean, if an insurance company inputs, say, for instance, the outcome of a census, it can rip the information to determine where places are more ethnically diverse. If there is a premium on that, that's really quite worrying.
Yes, it is. But the thing is that we can get ahead of this as we're doing with the study we're trying to do. And then basically you can correct for that. It's actually easier to do this with AI than it is with humans. Mm. So this is where we have an opportunity, because if you're going to automate any process, you can actually correct for biases in the system. And that's much easier actually to do than like trying to take an individual and say, listen, you need to change your ways, or even how they would spot that. So I actually think there's an opportunity with AI going forward that we'll actually be able to make the world a better place. I know that sounds very utopian, but we have a chance here to make things explicit, whereas previously they were implicit inside people's heads, which was much harder to deal with.
So what do you draw, Adrian, from this? Or are you just a data person, you know, when you've done the work with the team and you've stuck it out there? But have you any conclusions drawn here? Not necessarily about the future and AI's role, but just really, I suppose, the state of play as it is now.
I think the main thing for me, Greg, is to raise awareness. And I say this in all walks of my job life. So like people might be afraid is the word they might use in relation to artificial intelligence. What I would respond to that is I want to make people aware. Okay. And in this case, in this study, it's raising awareness both for the insurers, but also for the individuals, because we're all inside the European Union, and the European Union is trying to become like the leader in the world of ethical AI. And we're trying to help that be a success, essentially. So I'm trying to raise awareness in the first instance. And in that case, people can then know they have the confidence to ask for more information, for example. And by the way, there, accompanying this AI Act is an AI liability directive, which means that anybody in the EU that feels they've been discriminated against can take a case against the provider or the insurer in this case. And it's on, the burden of proof will be on the insurer if they're using AI to prove that their system is not biased against that individual.
Right. So, but one of the greatest challenges so far with AI, and this has been a real problem for the likes of Google and others, is biases in there. You know, and I hate the phraseology, but, you know, maybe it's too woke or it's trying to be too politically correct or all that type of stuff. So if you sort of let it off the reins to some extent, that seems to have been the biggest challenge so far. How can we be sure that those unintentional biases won't be applied to something as simple as car insurance that affects us every day?
Look, it's a great question, Greg. I mean, the thing that's happened in the past is, and this is an idea from like Silicon Valley, is like we move fast and we break things, okay? So it's like, how do we know something doesn't work? Well, we'll just throw it out there and see what happens and see what comes back. But now that the EU has gone forward with this legislation, it's basically calling to attention, hang on a second, we're not just going to run with that model of move fast and break things, okay? So you can still move fast, but like, for example, you will have to have your AI, if it's in a high-risk area like insurance, you will have to have that assessed. If there's a conformity assessment that it'll have to undergo, and then it's placed onto the EU marketplace, okay? So we're not just going to allow what's happened before, which is, yeah, we have this great new tech, we're just going to throw it out there, and if, you know, people lose their jobs, okay, then we know, okay, something happened, something bad happened, so we'll have to make it an adjustment. Yeah. So the EU is trying to get ahead of that and say, you know, hang on a second here. So I'll give you a very simple example, Greg. So, like, if you train something on white Irish men, right, and you're using AI, and so it's, say, it's car insurance in this case, right? So the AI becomes very, very good at pricing for white Irish men. If you deviate from that then and say, well, what if we have a, say, like, a, you know, a non-white Irish, non-white, non-Irish woman, okay? The AI wasn't trained on that, okay? So it's highly likely that it might make an erroneous output decision on that, okay? So it's only as good as what it's trained on. And there's an expression saying that garbage in, garbage out.
But it has to, but it has to be drawing from a knowledge base that might make it disadvantage a non-white, non-male person. Do you know what I mean? So like, you know, it's so like for it to make that different, it has to draw that knowledge from somewhere to not sort of favor that person over a white Irish male, to use your example.
Exactly, Greg, but the point is that what I'm saying is that we would acknowledge and be aware of what it was trained on versus what it wasn't trained on. Okay. So we would know that the level of accuracy was really good for white Irish men and not so good for everybody else. And we could certify that at the time that it was assessed, mm-hmm. that the AI was assessed. And we're not doing any of this right now, okay? Yeah. We're just flying blind, relying on big tech and anybody producing algorithms and saying, okay, well, we're not even asking, like, what was this trained on, okay?
Yeah. And I mean, it's great. Like, you know, it's amazing because there's a race on as well. And, you know, we need less haste, I think, in relation to this, because we don't want it to be a race to the bottom either, do we? On such an important advance, you know, the AI and how it's integrated into our lives, and to some extent it already is this is one area I think it's huge, right? So we need to get it right. And as I say, and even just now, look at NVIDIA, second most valuable company in the United States, really driven, I suppose, off the back of the whole AI boom. It's huge, Adrian, and as I say, we just have to make sure that we don't have a race to the bottom. We have a race to what's beneficial for the planet.
I totally agree, Greg, and I mean, I'm a fan of what the EU is trying to do, and as I say, my endeavour is to try and make what the EU is attempting a success rather than the naysayers saying, no, you have the US model of like Wild West capitalism, and then of course the arms race, and then with China as well, that has a different model of operation. So I'm working hard to try and make the EU a success. And I'm talking to you here from Belgium, and I'm at a conference at the moment working with Europeans on these very topics. You know, I'm part of a group that's trying to build regulatory sandbox, which is a safe space within the law, so that you can have innovative tech, AI.
How much lobbying is going on there, Adrian? How much lobbying is going over there from big tech? Because we've seen really, you know, much is being, I can't remember the exact name of the legislation, but the oversight effectively of social media companies and what have you, it has been incredibly watered down because of the absolute enormous funding and what have you of you know, large technology companies. They're going to want to water this down as much as is possible. Like, we have to make sure, this is why we send people over there, to ensure that we are actually protected and it is not sort of the lobby groups that get their way.
This is true, Greg. And I mean, I mean, I'm not a lobbyist and I don't have the budget for it either. And I'm not here lobbying at all. I'm here at a conference and just like a low level person working with other low level people who are full of talent. And we're trying to do our best in that regard. Like I said, my effort is to try and raise awareness so that like the electorates, the individuals that say in Ireland or in Europe can be more demanding, right? And we're operating on a shoestring here compared to the big tech. As you mentioned, NVIDIA.
Do you mind me ask, Adrian, do you have a backer? Like who funds your work?
Great question. I'm glad you asked that because they'd probably give it to me if I didn't say it. But yeah, I'm funded by the EU, I have a Marie Curie Fellowship. And it's administered by Enterprise Ireland. Mm-hmm. So I'm in a great position at the moment where I was given a budget to work on AI for 3 years, and I'm supported by Cedar and UCD and Itero Analytics.
And finally, we're going to make a point about NVIDIA, Adrian, and then I'll let you go because I know you're busy.
Yeah, no, thanks, Greg. No, the point I want to make is that we are really up against it. Like, you know, in the academic center and SME sector, we can't compete with big tech and the amount of resource they have for compute and all the rest of it. But I just want to say this, Greg, as a final point. Nobody has a monopoly on trust and trustworthiness. And so the area that I'm working in is about fostering and building trust and enhancing trust within AI. And no matter how big you are, you can't say, oh, you just need to listen to us and you don't need to listen to anybody else. So I use that as a David versus Goliath thing. It's like, that's my point, is that I'm entitled to stand up and speak and be heard about trust and trustworthiness in relation to AI. And Google or whoever cannot tell me to get off the stage.
Okay, right, okay. Thanks for that, Adrian. I appreciate it. Take care of yourself. Dr. Adrian Byrne there of Cedar and Adiro Analytics, 0866 25,000. Voting day on Friday, says a listener, and I don't have a clue who to vote for locally. One called to my door, but I wasn't in. I got the brochure and sorry, I missed your message. The rest, well, they just didn't bother. Who to vote for? I suppose vote for the person that you think that will work hardest for your area. Vote for the person that, you know, at local level, who you think might get things done, who might, you know, and sometimes it can be the simplest things, which are the most important, you know, who will actually take the time to try and get streetlights sorted, or if a pothole's developed, you know, make some representations on that. Who do you think that you could call if you were in a bit of bother and they could make a representation on your behalf? I suppose that's what it comes down to. And that could be all of them, or it could be five of them. I don't know. But that's what you're voting for locally. Like, I know people and talk to people who are voting for certain candidates because they, and sitting councillors or non-sitting councillors, because they want a councillor in their area, right? And, you know, even if you were to vote for a different party or non-party, you know, if you were in, okay, I can't make an example because it would sound like I'm talking about a particular candidate, which I'm not. But, you know, most people, I think, would prefer to have a councillor in their own area. And I think a lot of people vote that way. And then maybe use two, threes and fours to if it doesn't marry with party affiliation. How come the publication of the investigation into planning in Donegal is not being pushed by any of the candidates in the local election? Well, I don't know, but I've asked four housing ministers now for that report. There is problems with it in terms of publishing it, obviously, because it's not out there yet. Hi, Greg. Now that the councillors are on fire, I'd like to bring the attention to the viewing points. Totally neglected. I live in Inishowen, and for the most part, our viewing points are very well maintained. I took a trip around Donegal last week, very disappointed to see the viewing points above Glencolumbkill and Glengesh totally overgrown and paint peeling off the benches. That is not a good look if people are landing in the area. As tourism is our main asset, this is very disappointing. Keep up the good work. Looking forward to listening to the election results at the weekend. Yeah, that is worrying, you know, because first impressions last, and if someone's landing to these beautiful, look what they get to look at and take pictures of. But benches are peeled, with the paint's off them, signs overgrown, not good. And you know what? With a strimmer and a tin of paint and a couple of people, it wouldn't take long. It wouldn't take long to sort that out. The current government shouldn't be allowed to make funding announcements before elections, as they're buying votes. There have been a number of funding announcements in recent days, and it shouldn't be allowed to close the elections, so close to the elections. Right, let me see. Insurance. A caller says, I moved to Letterkenny from Killigordon. Their insurance went up nearly €60. Maybe you should move back to Killigordon. That's a big jump, but not as big as some. Hi, since the councillors-elect are all for helping people, especially at election time, can you get one on to get the pothole crater fixed on the roundabout at Glen Carr in Letterkenny? Right, okay. Now, Eddie Crawford joins me. Eddie, sorry for holding you there. Thank you very much for your time.
Hello, Greg. How are you doing? And thanks for inviting me on this morning.
No problem. We're talking about a special military mass which has been organised for the 28th of June towards the end of this month. It's in St. Patrick's Church, Murlough, Lifford. Who's this mass for, Eddie?
Well, the parish itself, the parish of Clonleigh, are celebrating two anniversaries themselves this year, Greg. One, it's the 50 years since the Clonleigh parish became independent. Up until then, it was the Strabane and Lifford parish that it became independent in 1874. And it's also 60 years since the consecration of the new church in Murlough. So there, the Father O'Doherty, who's the parish priest there, a dairyman, he wants to celebrate with all the different groups within the parish that have been part of the parish, very much part of the parish, over the years. And I would like to think possibly that the military, having served there in Lifford for 35 years of that, that would be one of the biggest in his list.
For sure, so, and that 28th Battalion 2 had members in Rock Hill as well, as Finner Camp. So all invited, I presume, all members, former members of the 28th Battalion.
Yeah, absolutely, because we all would have worked together over the years. We would have been operating in and around Letterkenny, and Rock Hill would have been quite often over with us in Lifford, as did Finner Camp, etc., you know. So it was a difficult time for the military at the time, but we moved into Lifford in February of 1974, and we became very much part of the community then over the years, not just from a security aspect, but we were involved very much in working with the local community, doing charity work and helping people out, and not just us in Lifford, but of course, as you say there, Rock Hill and Lifford too, we were all one big group that worked together.
And it is a big group, isn't it, when you think about it? Because obviously we're talking about soldiers, then there are civilian workers and families then who served in the prior military school post in Lifford as well.
Yeah, this is what the special mass is all about. What we're wanting to get, Greg, is all of the past members who would have served in the 28th Battalion, and especially in the Lifford area over those years, we would like them to come along and also to bring their family with them. Of course, there was a lot of civilian workers and various other workers. These are the people that the Father O'Doherty would like to invite to the occasion itself. And it's going to be a beautiful occasion, because the 28th Battalion themselves will be providing a guard of honour outside the church at 10:30 on the 28th, and they'll be joined with various retired associations of the Irish Army, and of course the Battalion Pipe Band will be there as well. But if you haven't heard them before, they're absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, and that's all ahead of the mass. So really, you want to be there at 10:00, because there is a parade, as you mentioned, taking place beforehand for the 28th Infantry Battalion, as well as various veterans association. The mass itself starts at 11:00, And it's going to be quite moving for some, I think, because the deceased, the names of all deceased members of the 28th Infantry Battalion will be read out as part of that service. I think it's a beautiful way to actually mark a person's memory. But as I say, it's going to be a mixture of emotions there, I think, Eddie.
Yeah, but it would also be a very proud moment for the people who have worked in the with the battalion.
I think I just imagine myself. You know? I think I'm just imagining myself as a son of maybe someone who served in the 28th Infantry Battalion, and to sort of be there and for them to be remembered in such a way. I think that's where that would make me quite. You know, that would bring out emotions in me of happiness and pride.
That was. I mean, the first person comes to mind when you mention that. There's a young fellow from Lifford there, God rest him, Philzy Grogan, who died over in South Lebanon during one of his terms with the United Nations over there. And, you know, you have people like that, young people like that, that actually gave up their lives in the interest of peace, but not just peace abroad, but peace at home as well, you know. So, yeah, it will be emotion, but it will also be a very proud occasion for all the families and the retired soldiers that will be attending it, Greg.
Okay, and that's part of the year-long series of events and what have you to mark the anniversaries that you mentioned. And it is this event, the 28th of June, St. Patrick's Church, Murlough, Lifford, the Mass in honour of the soldiers of the 28th Infantry Battalion who have served in the area over the years. That's including soldiers, civilians, workers and families, and members of the 28th Battalion, and also any members who served in Rockhill and Finner Camp. More than welcome, if they've served over the years, to come along to that Mass.
Yes,
but get there from 10.
Yes, and the invitation also extends out to other military personnel who, in those years, it was called the Western Command, and many soldiers would have come up from Athlone, Galway, Mullingar, Longford, places like that, and also served with the 28th, and the invitation is open to them as well. But it's very important that, you know, if there's going to be big numbers there in the morning, Greg. So it's very important that we try to establish the numbers, because the 28th Battalion Catering Corps will be providing refreshments after the Mass in the local community centre in Lifford's. So we need to have an idea of the numbers are coming going to it. So if it's okay with you, could I give you the parish office? So the parish office in Murlough in Lifford is... the number is 074-914-2001. And the email address is clonleyparish@derrydiocese.org.
Now, we retain that retain that info here, Eddie, because people know our number off by heart. What you're saying is if you're intending to attend, please give some prior notice so you can get an idea of numbers. Okay.
I need to give the catering corps in Finner Camp a week's notice of, you know, the amount of the rough number of people.
Of
I'll also leave my own mobile number with you and my email address as well, Greg.
We
if anybody wants
no,
to
listen, if anyone contacts us and they want to let you know they're coming, we'll get that to you. Don't worry about that. I wish Eddie all the best with Mass. It'll be beautiful. That comes in from Geraldine in Lifford. Okay. Listen, Eddie,
lovely.
Thank you very much for that. Appreciate it. Lovely to talk to you, Eddie. Okay, bye-bye. Eddie Crawford there. Any information you need in relation to that, 086 60 25,000. Right. I've got two voting cards, one to an address I lived in 10 years ago and was never registered till this year, and one in my house and none to my own address. Strange enough, it is. Listen, the voting register is a bit of a mess. My son worked in Galway and recently moved to work in Dublin. He now won't be able to vote tomorrow, which seems very unfair. He has a driving license and a passport. All you would need to prove one's identity. It seems unfair. But I suppose there has to be some rules eventually, but people are going to miss out. Good morning, Greg. The news again that the population on Tory Island will be without a GP or nurse until June 20th. This is the second time for this to happen. If I'm correct, how can the HSE let this happen again? Would it be tolerated if it was happening elsewhere in the country? That comes in from Charlie. Yes, indeed, Charlie. I did get that notification yesterday. Let me see if I have the info here. It was from the HSC. Their statement reads, the helicopter that was scheduled to fly a nurse and GP to Tory Island tomorrow, Thursday the 6th of June, which is today, has now been cancelled due to technical issues. Interim measures are being put in place. The HSC wishes to apologise for any inconvenience caused to patients or clients. The next scheduled flight is due to operate on the Thursday of the 20th of June. Yep, so you're spot on, Charlie, with your assessment of timelines there. A caller says, but if you vote for a party candidate in the local election just because you like him or her but don't like the party, you're continuing to let the party politics stay in power. Yeah, I get where you're coming from, and it's not really an opinion I have, but at the end of the day, you know, the local authority is about someone close to you, you would hope, that can get stuff done for you. None of these parties are going to go away. You know, Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael may fall off. I'm not sure they're going to fall off much now in the next two elections. Sinn Féin might go up, and then 5 years' time, it'll all revert. You know, unless something drastic changes in this country, ebbs and flows, really.